It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. The son of an Afghan immigrant opened fire on a packed nightclub with mostly gay clientele in the U.S. city of Orlando, Florida, early Sunday, killing 50, wounding more than 50. The worst mass shooting in U.S. history, police identifying the slain shooter as 29-year-old Omar Mateen, a U.S. citizen. Law enforcement is trying to determine whether the attack was inspired by Islamic State. Our Nicholas Pallarino is a terrorism analyst at Washington's Georgetown University.
It certainly appears at this point that this was at least ISIS, Islamic State inspired, or a jihadist movement inspired attack.
Mateen reportedly made phone calls pledging allegiance to IS. He had been interviewed by federal agents after he allegedly bragged to co-workers about ties to Al-Qaeda. President Obama declared the Sunday attack an act of terrorism.
This is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans.
Also Sunday, Los Angeles police say they arrested a man with a car full of weapons and explosives with the intention of attacking that city's gay pride parade. A suicide bomber killed at least one person Sunday in Libya as forces loyal to the country's new unity government pressed its offensive to take the Islamist State stronghold of Sirte. The new UN-backed government has made defeat of IS a top priority. This is VOA News. A powerful bomb blast ripped through a commercial area of the Lebanese capital, Beirut, on Sunday, damaging the Blom Bank, one of the country's largest. Beirut and its suburbs have been hard hit with a string of bombings that authorities have frequently linked to the civil war in nearby Syria. Blom Bank is also taking part in a U.S. program aimed at sanctioning the militant group Hezbollah. Iraq's army says it has secured a safe corridor for civilians out of the embattled western city of Fallujah, and a humanitarian agency says some 4,000 residents were able to flee in the past day. The Norwegian Refugee Council warned that available resources, including safe drinking water, could not meet refugee needs much longer. UN last week voiced concern for the fate of as many as 90,000 civilians being trapped inside the city without basic food and medical necessities. Meantime, the Iraqi army is also launching a fresh advance in the direction of the northern city of Mosul with the help of U.S.-led airstrikes. European football's governing body, UEFA, threatened on Sunday to expel both Russia and England from Euro 2016 in France if their fans continue violent behavior. Dozens of people were injured in 3 days of violence known as hooliganism, with the worst incident in Marseille late Saturday after British and Russian soccer fans clashed inside and outside the stadium.
Je salue aujourd'hui la décision de l'UEFA.
French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve denounced the violence as unacceptable and welcomed UEFA's decision. In Nice, violence between Northern Irish football fans and local residents injured several people, with a minor skirmish breaking out Sunday between opposing fans and a march between Germany and Ukraine in Lille. Police in Bangladesh arrested thousands of suspects in a nationwide sweep following a violence against religious minorities there, as well as secular activists. Islamic State extremists have claimed responsibility for more than 20 of the killings. Italy's Coast Guard on Sunday said it has picked up more than 4,000 migrants over the past 4 days trying to make it to Europe from North Africa as the flow of refugees and migrants continues at a rapid pace. More than 48,000 have made it to the Italian soil so far this year, but hundreds have perished in the attempt. You can get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com. Also check us out on the VOA mobile app. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, June the 13th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Some Congo's main opposition parties say they have formed a united front against President Joseph Kabila.
We are in Belgium now to confirm that all the opposition is ready now to understand and to recognize in Mr. Tshisekedi the leadership of all the opposition.
Vidya Shimanga is the vice president of Alternative 2016, one of the groups making up the new opposition coalition. We'll hear the views of two Zimbabweans on whether 92-year-old President Robert Mugabe should step down or remain in power. And Uganda Kizza Besigye, who is charged with treason, has sent a letter to the country's chief justice.
The main purpose of the letter was to bring to the attention of the Chief Justice the various complaints that he had related to how he's been arrested, not just on this current imprisonment, but over the last so many years.
Olive Kobu Singe is the sister of former FDC presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye. Foreign blockbuster movies get a comic Kenyan twist, using art to hopefully fix Nigeria's education system. And President Barack Obama called Florida massacre most deadly shooting in American history. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leading opposition parties in the Democratic Republic of Congo say they have organized themselves under one umbrella to force President Joseph Kabila to leave power when his second term concludes at the end of this year. The new coalition includes the Union for Democracy and Social Progress, led by veteran opposition figure Etienne Tshisekedi, the Dynamic Opposition, and the G7, which recently chose the governor of Katanga province, Moise Katumbi, as its presidential candidate. Vidya Shimanga is vice president of Alternative 2016, one of the group making up the new coalition. He says the new alliance will be led by veteran politician Tshisekedi.
A lot of people told some time ago that Mr. Katumbi was the leader of opposition, but finally everybody knows and understands that he's very new in the opposition and he cannot handle all the opposition and this very important role. But Mr. Tshisekedi, which is an opponent not only on Mr. Kabila the son, but also on Kabila the father, and before on Mr. Mobutu, finally, we all recognize in him the leadership that we need today to lead all of us. And now Mr. Katumbi and the G7 and all the opposite parties came under Mr. Tshisekedi's leadership and to make a very strong power against the actual government in Kinshasa.
This new movement, does it include Mr. Vital Kamerhe or the Jean-Pierre Bemba movement?
Mr. Vital Kamerhe didn't come by himself, but he sent his vice president and second vice president, so the number two and number three of his party. They came at this meeting in Genval in Belgium, and they signed with us this agreement. So I suppose that it means that the UNC of Mr. Kamerhe is with us and understands that we have to be together in a common fight.
There have been rallies in the Congo against President Kabila, calling on him not to run for a third term. This new group, are you willing to sit down with President Kabila to talk about the way forward?
We agree to sit with the presidential majority, so the Kabila's camp. We agree to sit with them. If they respect the UN resolution 2277, and we will respect that all, and together we will find out a solution to bring our countries out of all this mess that we are living today, because we don't want any more wars, any fights, any whatever.
Yeah. The Constitutional Court ruled that the president can stay in power if there are no elections held, and the protest has been against that. So what does the president need to do in order for the protest to stop?
The first thing he has to do is to accept the dialogue respecting the UN resolution 2277. Second, he has to release all the political prisoners. He has to recognize that he will not run for a third mandate. The question of election, we will debate on it during this dialogue and to see how and in what terms, in what time we can organize those elections, respecting our constitution. It's not so complicated. I think that the actual government can understand that what we are looking for is a peaceful exit to the actual situation.
Vidya Shimanga is the vice president of Alternative 2016, one of the groups making up the new opposition coalition in the DRC. He was speaking with me from Belgium. In Uganda, the former Forum for Democratic Change presidential candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, has written to the country's chief justice to complain about what he calls his mistreatment. Besigye, who has claimed he won the February 18th presidential election, was charged with treason after a video surfaced showing he had been sworn in by his party as president of Uganda. In the letter, Besigye recounted his treatment over the years by the government and the legal system, beginning with his participation in the 2001 presidential election. Olive Kobusinge is Dr. Besigye's sister, who just visited him last Friday at Luzera Prison. She says Dr. Besigye wants the Chief Justice to take a stand because evil triumphs if good people do nothing.
The main purpose of the letter was to bring to the attention of the Chief Justice the various complaints that he had related to how he's been arrested, not just on this current imprisonment, but over the last so many years and the various abuses that he suffered really under both the Ugandan police, but also the judiciary that was supposed to be defending his rights that have up until now actually not failed to do so. So I think the main thrust of the letter is to say to the Chief Justice, this is the judiciary. You're the person at the helm of this institution. And blatant abuses are being carried on, and, so do something.
Did Dr. Besigye say also that he is being mistreated?
He has been mistreated. In fact, the title of the letter is Complaint About Mistreatment, which is no surprise. I mean, case in point, he's been arraigned before two courts and charged with the same offenses. Some of these courts have happened outside of regular court hours. He's been shuttled to places which were outside the jurisdiction of the, you know, where he was supposed to have committed these offenses.
In one line, Dr. Besigye seems to be expressing the worry or the concern that he could be tried in secret.
Yeah, and this is not speculation. You know, a couple of weeks ago, he was supposed to be brought to court for the hearing of his case. He wasn't brought to court, and the prosecution said that it was because they had serious security concerns. And then they actually made an application to the magistrate to say, can the case not now be heard in that court, but rather be heard in Luzira, in a prison. So they've actually, the state has actually made the application to not bring him to a public court, but to try him in Luzira, which is where he's being incarcerated.
In the letter to the Chief Justice, he used the words of Edmund Burke, saying that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. In a way, don't you think he's putting the Chief Justice right there to do something?
He is putting him on the spot. He's requiring him to be answerable and to either step up and do something, or indeed, if he decides to do nothing, then, yeah, that's how evil triumphs.
We hear that Dr. Besigye has chosen to represent himself. Is that the fact?
That's correct.
But he's not a lawyer. How is he going to represent himself before the Supreme Court?
He's not a lawyer. He's certainly been around Ugandan court, you know, for long enough. So I suppose that he is going to be able to represent himself. But I think it's not so much whether he has the capabilities of a lawyer as the fact that he initially wasn't allowed the opportunity to hire a team of lawyers. And then I think as events evolved, it became obvious that this wasn't going to be a legal process and that the government was actually just going through the motions to make it seem as though there was some legal process underway, when really what it was political persecution. So I think he's just decided to take it in the same manner and to say, well, if there isn't going to be a fair legal process, then he's going to present himself.
Olive Kobusinge is the sister of former FDC presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye. She was speaking with me from Uganda capital, Kampala. Today is Monday, June 13th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and let's send a shout-out to listeners on our affiliate station, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. A London-based activist who supports Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party says 92-year-old President Robert Mugabe should remain in office as long as Zimbabweans vote him in. Nick Magwana says Mr. Mugabe should contest the 2018 election because his advanced age does not restrict him from effectively occupying the presidency. On the other hand, opposition MDCT spokesperson Ober Gutu says Mr. Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe for more than 36 years, should leave office. Both Magwana and Gutu spoke with Gabe Dube of Viewers Zimbabwe program in this political panel discussion. First, Mr. Magwana.
Mr. Gute and I are two people here. There are nearly 7 million registered voters in Zimbabwe. So we're simply saying, let's go back to the 7 million voters in 2018 when the time is up, according to the Constitution. Mr. Gute and I, we both respect the Constitution. So let's just go back to the to what the Constitution prescribes, and we do that. That's all. That's all we're asking for.
So I think, Mr. Gutu, you can hear him. He's very clear about the Constitution. What does it say about the president staying in office?
Now, of course, we all know that our Constitution has no age limit regarding the president, which is unfortunate. But anyway, that is what the Constitution says. Our argument is saying, look, Mr. Mugabe is going to be 93. He's going to be 93 in early 2017, in February 2017. If you look at him today, you actually feel pity for him to say, this is the man whom people are saying he should continue leading ZANU-PF. This is the man whom people are saying he should continue leading Zimbabwe. This is not fair. They are punishing the old man. So for some of us who are genuine patriots, some of us in the MDC, who genuinely love Zimbabwe, we are saying Mr. Mugabe should actually step down. Look at the economy now. Everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. Right now, people are spending endless hours in this bitterly cold weather, queuing for the little money in their banks, and they can't even access their $20, $50, because there's no money. The country has virtually run out of money. And we are saying, look, there's no way that Mr. Mugabe, in that form of health, he can extricate Zimbabwe from the prevailing socio-economic, you know, catastrophe. The best that we can do for the nation is to retire him, one, and also to retire his whole cabinet. They've all proved that they are not fit for purpose. They are corrupt. They're corrupt. We want a new government, a government that cares about the people, a government that will make sure that Zimbabwe's economy is stabilized and that the country is taken to the next level.
Mr. Mangwana, your last word and the way forward here.
My last word is very simple. The people of Zimbabwe are known for their high literacy. They are also known for their high numeracy. In 2013, they knew that Mr. Mugabe was 89 years old. They at least can add 5. To 89, which would have given them 94. So they knew that how old he would be by this time. But they still said, we want him as he is. So he has got that term. Let's not subvert the Constitution. He has got the term. 2018, the decisions he are saying, if you are seeing that the man is withered and tired and whatever you say, that's the whole point of going back to the people to say, do you renew the mandate or not? If the people say, no, we cannot renew this mandate, fine. But if the people say, as he is, let's go, then let's go.
That was London-based activist Nick Magwana, who supports Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. You also heard Ober Gutu, spokesperson for the opposition MDCT. They both spoke with Gabe Dube of Viewers Zimbabwe program. U.S. President Barack Obama has called Sunday's massacre at a Florida nightclub the most deadly shooting in American history. A gunman killed at least 50 people and wounded more than 50 others in an attack on a crowded gay nightclub in the city of Orlando. Law enforcement officials say they are investigating the massacre as an act of terrorism. Zlatica Hook reports.
A terrible attack.
President Obama said the attack on a club frequented by the gay and lesbian community is an attack on the United States and its values.
This was an act of terror and an act of hate. And as Americans, we are united in grief, in outrage, and in resolve to defend our people.
The president also said such an act was possible primarily because it is easy to purchase weapons in the United States.
And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. And to actively do nothing is a decision as well.
The gunman, identified as Omar Mateen, an American citizen of Afghan descent, stormed a Pulse nightclub about 2 a.m. and opened fire on about 300 people inside. Some managed to escape through the back door. Others threw themselves on the floor or hid as best they could.
At first, I thought it was the music, but then I saw him. He was maybe 20, 30 feet away from me, and I saw the fire coming out of his gun every time he shot fire. Everybody hit the floor.
The gunman was shot dead in the confrontation with police who arrived on the scene. Officials say they are investigating if he had links with radical Islamist organizations.
I have checked with intelligence staff, and they do believe that there is some connection to ISIS, but I might say that is not official.
Leaders of Muslim organizations in the United States were quick to condemn the shooting and urged the news media to avoid sensationalism.
We should all wait till information, facts come out from the investigators, and we will all see what happened, understand it, and stay together, to work together to keep our community strong.
The terrorist group Islamic State claimed responsibility for the Orlando shooting through its media outlets. The attack took place as Muslims observed the holy month of Ramadan. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Demand for foreign movies is growing in Kenya as entrepreneurs bring Hollywood blockbusters to local audiences, but with a twist. The movies are dubbed in Swahili, but they have extra commentary and sound effects. Rael Ombuo reports for VOA from the makeshift theaters in Kibera, Nairobi's largest slum.
There may not be popcorn or velvet seats, but for these moviegoers in Kibera, the magic of Hollywood or Bollywood is still brought home. With one key difference.
Before these Swahili movies, you would find most people used to sleep a lot in the middle of a movie because they would not understand the language. But now they don't sleep. They laugh a lot because of the effects.
The movies such as Bollywood production Kante or the latest installment of the U.S. Fast and the Furious series are not simply dubbed over. The man responsible for them is known as DJ Afro, an elusive Nairobi comedian. In his tracks, he will describe the scenes. In raunchy or romantic parts, he adds local slang, a big hit with audiences. Part of DJ Afro's desire to remain anonymous may have to do with the fact that these are illegally pirated films, but he is famous nonetheless.
The way he brings out the story is great. He knows how to bring out the humor in a story and make people laugh.
There are about 100 theaters like this in Kibera. A ticket costs just 5 U.S. cents.
Most of the boys in this neighborhood are unemployed. We get bored doing nothing, so we hang out in this movie place.
Kenyan authorities do not try to shut down the popular theaters. People here say the movies keep young people out of trouble and provide a much-needed escape. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Nigerian artist Modupe Olafadupe won a prize at this year's Dark Art African Contemporary Art Biennale for her piece, The People's Algorithm. Fadupe used her experience as lifelong student and her professional experience as director of student affairs at the African University of Science and Technology in Abuja to design the artwork. The work is a life-size game that explores various challenges and potential solutions in the Nigerian education system. Fadupe tells Ricky Stryak she hopes this type of art can start a conversation about how to fix the problems in Nigeria's education system.
The name of my installation is The People's Algorithm, and it is essentially a game installation. It's an interactive game that aims to explore the various challenges in the education system in Nigeria. I originally built it in 2014 as an entry into the national art competition in Nigeria, and that year the particular theme was interventions. And so I decided to look at various interventions that could be applied in the education space in Nigeria.
And what were the main aspects of the Nigerian educational system that you wanted to draw attention to?
Well, I mean, I've worked in education for about 6 or 7 years at different levels, and I really wanted to just highlight the fact that there are challenges that exist at every level, from the primary school level, the secondary school, issues of mass examination failure at the secondary school level, issues of huge enrollment gaps at the primary school level. I think we have maybe one of the highest out-of-school population for young people not in school at the primary school level. And then just all the way up to issues of unemployment. We have about 20 million unemployed young people, and it's really just looking at the entire spectrum, really, of challenges and trying to ask people, where should we start from if we're going to pick one challenge to address?
Where do you think you should start from if you're going to pick one challenge to address?
Actually, this creating the game was useful to me because at the end of it all, I think I learned that we should start from maybe the unemployment situation. Because it's one thing to get these 10 million kids that are not in school at the primary level into school, get them through high school, and then they have to struggle through university strikes, and then they finish school, and there's no promise of a job. So I think it's probably better to work from the top down.
Do you feel like the message has been received? Do you think that it could affect change, that art such as yours can affect change in the country?
I think the first time I created the installation, from a policy perspective, because I've worked in policy, I think I used to say that this is something that's going to help create change. And I don't think necessarily that's the case, at least not directly. I think a lot of people have received the game well, and at least it's creating that consciousness, that awareness that this is a really big challenge, and the fact that all the teachers, the students, the policymakers have to work together. I think if that's the only takeaway that people have from playing the game, then I think it's a good message of cooperation.
You won a prize at the Biennale. Congratulations. What is that prize? What's your takeaway? How do you think the Biennale went in terms of your own art and, you know, the art that you got to see?
Sure. So I won one of the grand prizes. There were four grand prizes. I won one of them from the Minister of Culture and Communications. That was hugely unexpected. I was completely surprised. I think the Biennale was well curated. I mean, I think we have to applaud on Simon Jami for the curation. It really was a great event to be part of, and the feedback from even visitors has been great. So I'm hoping that 2018 improve on the organization and, you know, really bring the Dakar Biennale to the world.
That was Nigerian artist Modupe Ola Fadugbe speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Hosts Benin edged Equatorial Guinea 2-1 in their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers in Cotonou on Sunday. Consequently, Benin rise to 11 points, two more than Mali in Group C. South Sudan has 3 points and Equatorial Guinea has 1 point. In Namibia, Lesotho outplayed Mauritius 3-0 as Malawi dismissed Angola 3-0 in Group B action at the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's COSAFA Cup in Windhoek on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Zimbabwe and Swaziland drew 2-2. And Madagascar pipped Seychelles 1-0 in Group A fixtures. Today, Monday, Swaziland engage Seychelles as Madagascar face Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, hosts Mali outplayed Mauritania 4-1 to advance on a 7-1 aggregate in their 2017 Africa Under-20 Championship qualifier in Bamako on Sunday. Lesotho pipped Mozambique 1-0 to advance on a 2-1 advantage. Morocco and Gambia drew 1-1. Gambia win 2-1 as Cameroon eliminated Zimbabwe 3-0. The Republic of Congo and Burkina Faso drew 2-2. The Congolese progress on the away goal rule. Ivory Coast pipped Guinea 1-0. However, with a 2-2 aggregate, Guinea advanced on the away goal rule. Early on Saturday, defending champions Nigeria edged Burundi 2-1 to progress on a 3-1 aggregate. Senegal blanked Tunisia 2-0 to prevail 4-1 on aggregate. South Africa beat Namibia 2-0, while Angola dismissed Gabon 3-1. On Friday, Egypt squeezed past Rwanda on a 3-2 post-match penalty shootout after they tied 1-1 on aggregate. The tragedy struck Nigeria again when Nigeria Football Federation technical director Shuaibu Amodu passed away in Benin City, Edo State, South Nigeria. The Nigeria Football Federation president Amaju Pinnick disclosed on Saturday. Amodu is the four-time Nigeria Super Eagles coach. He guided the Super Eagles to qualify for the 2002 and 2010 FIFA World Cups. Last Wednesday, former Nigeria coach Stephen Keshi passed away also in Benin City. On a more cheerful note, in athletics, Ivory Coast's Maria Lahore improved the Africa women's 100-meter record to 10.78 seconds when she triumphed at the Star Athletics Pro Meet in Monteverde in Florida State in the United States of America on Saturday. She erases the 10.79 seconds mark set by Nigerian Blessing Okagbare Igote Gwenor. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, June 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Button, Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.